Well, this morning we return to John's Gospel, but not to our series, so please come with me to John 21. And we're thinking about the restoration of Peter. Now, Peter has fallen. He's denied Christ three times. He needs to be restored. There can be no going forward until he is restored. Martin Luther said, "To progress is always to begin again." So, Christian friend, we're a little way into 2011, but at the start of 2011, do you need to begin again? 2010 has ended, but is there unfinished business? Maybe like Peter, you've fallen into open sin. 2010 was a mess. Unfinished business. Maybe in 2010 you've fallen into a thousand little sins, secret sins. Think of a coral reef made up of thousands of marine polyps. Each is tiny, each is apparently insignificant, but together they can build a reef which can sink a navy. And 2010 has been the year of little sins, secret sins, a cold heart, a hard heart. Maybe there's been a bitter spirit, and you've built a reef which could shipwreck your faith in 2011. Unfinished business. Maybe in 2010 you've played a deadly game. You've convinced yourself that sin is not what it is, and you've rationalized it, and you've made it appear less than it is. But spiritual falls don't just happen, do they? Maybe this morning you're in denial and you're playing a deadly game. And the only thing that's keeping you back, the only thing that rescued you in 2010 was a lack of opportunity. Unfinished business. Maybe 2010 was all about you. And rather than a walk-on part in God's story, you've taken the lead role in your story. Now, you want God to be a part of your story. You want him to play a big part in your story. You want him to play a beautiful part in your story. You want him to bless you. But it's still your story. As long as God keeps to the script, and you've written the script. But 2010 has all been about me, rather than about him and his glory. Unfinished business. And maybe, Christian friends, this morning, things in 2010, they just weren't what they should be. You can't quite put your finger on it, but you know, there wasn't that heat of delight, of a fervour of service. Maybe like Paul, you can say, "What I'm doing, I do not understand. For what I will to do, that I do not practice. But what I hate, I do." And for you, there's unfinished business. So at the start of 2011, do I need to be restored? To progress is always to begin again. Can't just leave things unfinished. Well, please come with me to John 21. We have three things to say. And the first is this. Point one is setting the scene. Now, verse one. Peter with six of the disciples, they're back on familiar ground, they're by the Sea of Tiberias, we're more familiar with the other name, the Sea of Galilee. So Peter says, verse 3, "I'm going fishing." And they reply, "We're coming too." But verse 3, we read, "That night they caught nothing." And John stresses it. He says, "That night." It wasn't what they were expecting. Normally when you go out fishing at night, normally there's a catch of fish. But they caught nothing. Well, as the dawn comes, standing on the shore is a figure. And the pale grey of the morning, it's impossible for the disciples to see who the figure is. But it's Jesus. Verse 5. Then Jesus said to them, "Children, have you any food?" They answered him, "No." Children, we might say lads. That's the sense of it. He's saying, "Lads, have you caught any fish?" Not an unusual request. Maybe the stranger wants to buy some. Over in Sri Lanka, One trip across the bay, we met a fishing boat and we bought fish from them. Have you caught any fish? Yes, well, can we buy some? It was an unusual request from a stranger on the shore. But look at their reply. Lads, have you caught any food? They answered him, no. Just one word, no explanation, nothing more, no. And you immediately know the state of mind. These men, they're cold, they're hungry, they're tired, they're fed up, they've been fishing all night, and they've caught nothing. And there the conversation might have ended. They answered him, no. But Jesus reaches across to them. Verse 6, and he said to them, cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some. Maybe they think, as the stranger is on the shore looking out to the boat, maybe they think he can see. Maybe there's a swirl of a fish, a shoal, on the right side of the boat. Maybe they think he can see a shoal. Maybe they're just too tired to resist. So when he says it, oh, it's just, well, at least let's try it. Or maybe there's something in the stranger's voice. So they cast, and now they were not able to draw it in because of the multitude of fish. It's an echo of another day, isn't it? By the Sea of Galilee, when their net was full to bursting. And John sees and understands, and he turns to Peter. It's the Lord. And what does Peter do? Verse 7. Now when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, for he had removed it, and plunged into the sea. So what's Peter up to? Why jump into the sea? Why get wet? Why not arrive with the others in the boat? Bit silly, isn't it? And what does it tell you about Peter? Well, have you ever done anything silly for love? Peter loves Jesus. He longs to be at his side. He wants to show that he loves Jesus by getting to him first. So as Peter wades ashore, the others, it seems that they anchor the main boat, and then they're using the dinghy, the little boat, and they make their way to the shore, dragging the net full of fish. And when they come ashore, what's the sight that greets them? Verse 9. As soon as they had come to land, they saw a fire of coals there, and fish laid on it, and bread. Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish which you have just caught. Jesus understands men perfectly. What do cold, wet, tired, hungry men need? What do they need? They need food, don't they? And warmth. So what a welcoming sight. A barbecue by the sea. A couple of years ago, we had a barbie on the shore. And the waves rolled in. And we had a barbecue. And they call them Cornish sardines now. They used to be called pilchards. And there you have it on the sea. It's fantastic. The taste was wonderful. So all this, and Jesus too. Wouldn't you want to be there? Now, when Jesus says, verse 10, bring some of the fish which you have just caught, who jumps up? Verse 11, Simon Peter went up and dragged the net to land full of large fish, 153. Although there were so many, the net was not broken. So again, what does that tell you about Peter? Well, for one thing, it tells you that he's a great bear of a man. He's the one who jumps up. He's the one who pulls in a net filled with 153 large fish. You try doing that. That's why we read in verse 18, he says, most assuredly I say to you, when you were younger, you girded yourself and walked where you wished. Peter could walk anywhere he liked. No one got in the way of Peter. He's a big man. So it tells you that. But again, we're being told, aren't we, that here is a man who is in love with Christ. When you've wronged someone that you love, and they make a request, they throw a request out, not to anyone specifically, what do? You show willingness, don't you? You want to get yourself back into their love, get yourself back into their affections. Nothing seems too much trouble. Well, Jesus, having called to the disciples, then welcomed them ashore, he now draws his disciples closer still. Look at verse 12. They're all a bit sheepish. They're all keeping a polite distance. No one knows quite what to say. Peter's feeling tense. They're face to face with the Lord. Well, says Jesus, come on, come nearer, come. Come, eat breakfast. Gather round. Sit with me. Take your place, it's all for you. And while they eat, Jesus waits on them, verse 13, making sure everyone has what they need. And perhaps now there's no need to say anything. They're with Jesus. This is now the third time Jesus showed himself to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. Jesus has set the scene for Peter's restoration. It's a wonderful passage, this, isn't it? As you read it, you think, well, Jesus knows men. You know what hungry men are like. You know what tired men are like. It's no good talking to them, is it? You don't get any sense out of them. They're too distracted. But you fill their bellies with food, and they're ready for anything. I used to go mountain walking, and you go for some distance, and then someone gets a bit ratty, and they're a bit uncommunicative, and they're a bit sharp. What do? You give them a Mars bar. Give them a Mars bar, they're right as rain. You give them some food, and they're absolutely fine. Men are very simple, aren't they? You know, when we have the young men back at 160, what do? Young men, we give you plenty of food. Why? Because it puts you in a good mood. You can face anything after stuffing your faces. So Christ knows his sheep. Well, point number two, Peter's restoration. Now, how many times has Peter denied Jesus? Three times. Did he listen to the warnings? No. The account is in a number of the Gospels, but I'll just turn to Luke 22. Luke 22 and verse 33. This is Peter's words now. He speaks to Jesus. He says, listen to this. Lord, I am ready to go with you both to prison and to death. I'm ready to die with you. Then he said to him, then Jesus said, I tell you, Peter, the rooster shall not crow this day before you will deny three times that you know me. But Peter's restoration begins almost at once. A little bit later on, in Luke 22, we read of Peter's denial, and when we come to verse 59, it's the third time he denies Christ. Then, after about an hour had passed, another confidently affirmed, saying, surely this fellow was with him, for he is a Galilean. But Peter said, man, I do not know what you are saying. Immediately, while he was still speaking, the rooster crowed. And the Lord turned and looked at Peter. Then Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had said to him, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. So Peter went out and wept bitterly. At the point of denial, even then, the restoration begins. We read, the Lord turned and looked at Peter. Now, isn't that wonderful? The Lord didn't look away. Peter, you disgust me. And turned his face away. He looked at Peter. What was in that look? Well, it was enough to break Peter's heart, wasn't it? It was enough to turn this great bear of a man into a weeping child. So Peter went out and wept bitterly. So what was in that look? It was a look of love. As their eyes met, I wonder what flashed through Peter's mind. Was it their first meeting? Or was it by the Sea of Galilee when Peter said to Jesus, depart from me, O Lord, for I am a sinful man. And Jesus said, no, you're actually coming with me. Follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men. Maybe it was countless episodes. 3 glorious years of Jesus' unquenchable, invincible, glorious love. And now I've denied him. And Peter's broken. The restoration has already begun. And then on the third day at the empty tomb, in Mark's Gospel, do you remember what the angel says? Mark 16, verse 7. But go tell his disciples and Peter that he is going before you into Galilee. There you will see him as he said to you. But go tell his disciples and Peter. Peter singled out as a special word. Peter is not yet over. Wonderful, isn't it? Sometimes, Christian friends, in relationships, there is no way back. But not with Jesus. Unfinished business, there's always a way back. Well, if the restoration has already begun, that look, that special word for Peter, the main act will take place by the Sea of Tiberias. Now, Jesus planned every detail. Where is Peter? He's by the Sea of Tiberias, where he was first called. And now, like then, he'd fished all night and caught nothing. And now, like then, there'd been a huge catch of fish, only this time the net didn't break. And now, like then, he's under conviction of sin. Well, did Christ send him away then? No. He said to him, follow me. So maybe there's hope now. The Jesus who still welcomes sinful men. And as Peter comes ashore, what does he see? He sees a fire of coals. Because it was beside another fire of coals that Peter denied the Lord. If he's to be restored, there has to be a facing up to what has happened. You can't progress, Christian friend, if there is unfinished business. So everything's in place. And then Jesus asks him three questions. Why three? Because in Peter's mind, there's another three. Three questions, not to make Peter squirm or grovel. There's a loving purpose behind it. Three questions which will confront Peter's threefold denial. Three questions which will force Peter to face up to his sin. Three questions which will exact from Peter a confession, a threefold confession to wipe away the stain of his threefold denial. So three times Jesus asks, do you love me? Now you may be aware that in the Greek there are different words for love. And two of those words are found in Jesus' questions and Peter's replies. Now some commentators make a lot of it. Some commentators say it's not significant at all. And if you want to read up on the point, I can point you in the right direction. But I don't want to get into that this morning. Let's just deal with Jesus' simple, penetrating question. So verse 15. So when they had eaten breakfast, okay, they've got full stomachs, they've warmed up. Peter's now ready to hear what Christ has to say to him. When they had finished eating breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these? More than these? More than Thomas, Nathaniel, James, John, the others? After all, what was Peter's boast? He said, even if all are made to stumble, not me. I can't speak for the others. But Lord, if you can't rely on them, you know you can rely on Peter. Peter, your right-hand man. Because, Lord, there's no one who loves you like I love you. Is that true, says Jesus? Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these? Verse 15. He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. The swagger has gone. I do love you. I do love you, but after what has happened, I can make no special claims. The pride has gone, hasn't it? The sense of status, the comparisons that he'd been making, they've all gone. I'm no better than anyone else. This is a humble Peter. He said to him, feed my lambs. Verse 16, he said to him again, a second time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? Peter, you've wronged me. You've wept bitter tears. You've been a coward and a Christ denier. None of it feels good. But what I really want to know from you, Peter, is not, do you feel guilty? Do you feel wretched? Do you feel you want peace? Do you want the mess cleared up? Never mind the collateral damage. What I really want to know from you, Peter, is do you love me? You see, we can hate our sin because of the way it makes us feel. Not because we love Christ. Do you love me? Tell me, Peter, face to face. He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, tend my sheep. And now crunch time, the third question. He said to him the third time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? And Peter is shaken, he's grieved. Jesus is calling his love into question. And why not? So much of your life, Peter, seems to say that you don't love me. So Peter, are these just words? Words that come easily? Because words are cheap. Do you love me? And all Peter can do is to throw himself on Christ. Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? He said to him, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. If Peter was a hypocrite, that would be the last thing he'd want to do, wouldn't it? To say, Lord, you know all things. If you're a hypocrite, you try to hide things. But as a believer, his great comfort is that Jesus really does know everything. Lord, look into my heart. I can't hide anything from you. You know all things. And you know, in spite of what I've done, in spite of what I've said, you know, Lord, that my heart still beats for you. And he's still a sinner, isn't he? As we always are. Falling upon the kind arms of Jesus. Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. So, Christian friend, three questions to finish the unfinished. What Jesus wants to know is Peter, not are you sorry? Not are you feeling sore? Not do you realize the mess that you've made? Not even, Peter, are you repentant? Not even, Peter, are you willing to serve me and obey me? But, Peter, do you love me? Because if he loves Christ, the rest will follow. So, Christian friend, this morning, what of you? Is there unfinished business? And have there been echoes and reminders over the past days, like Christ sent echoes and reminders to Peter to prepare the ground? And has Christ caught you with a look? Unfinished business. Is it a fall? Is it open sin? Was 2010 a mess? Is it a coral reef of thousands and thousands and thousands of little, apparently insignificant sins, unconfessed sins? But it's below the water, it's below the eye line. Others don't see it, and you pretend you don't see it, but it's there. Is it a deadly game? And you've been hiding your sin, minimizing your sin, excusing your sin, saying your sin is not really what it is. And the only thing that has kept you from falling is that the Lord has denied you the opportunity. And had the opportunity been there, had he set before you an open door, you would have been straight through it. Is it a story? Your story? And you've put yourself in the lead role. It's all about what I want. And the Lord is just one of the players in my story. And he better be on message and he better keep to the script. Or is it just that sense that everything is just, things aren't right, things aren't well, things aren't what they should be? Unfinished business. Christian friend, is it time to face up to where I am today? Do I need to begin again? I don't like this expression, but it'll do. Is there an elephant in the room? So are you willing to answer Jesus' questions? Well, are you sorry? Are you feeling bad? Do you realize the trouble you've caused, the mess you've made? Not are you repentant? Not are you willing to change? Not are you willing to serve and obey and do what you haven't been doing in 2010? Jesus says, let's go back to the first thing, the thing that really matters. Do you love me? So verse 15, he asks you, do you love me more than these? Has there been a bit of a swagger about you? You look at yourself and, okay, I'm a Christian, but I'm the best of a bad bunch. Maybe you've been making special claims, maybe not outwardly, but to yourself. You say, oh, I thank you, I'm not like so-and-so. I'm not like that Christian with their problems and their situation. And I wouldn't have done that. And I wouldn't have reacted like that. Oh, Lord, you can rely upon me. And you're so keen to make comparisons. And you look down at other Christians. Christ says, oh, right, okay. Do you love me more than these? Or are you humble? You recognize I'm just a dirty sinner, just like everybody else. And verse 16, he asks you, do you love me? Maybe Christian mental is a mess, but what is it that is upsetting you? Is it upsetting you that you feel guilty and you feel ashamed? Is it upsetting you that others know? Are you upset because you've lost your peace or you've lost your spiritual crackle? Or is it that what's really upsetting you is that you've wronged a wonderful Lord? After all that he's done. And that's what's breaking your heart. And Christian friend, when was the last time you told Jesus you love him? Friend comes to see you. Only this time he comes to borrow a book. Last time he came to get a bit of advice and borrow something else, and next time he comes it's because you've got Sky TV and he hasn't. And great to see you, but it just would have been nice if he'd come round to see me. Not just what I can provide. Well, we go to Christ in all our needs, don't we? And that's good, that's right. But when did you last seek the Lord just to spend time with him? Not because of something you wanted, something you needed, some crisis, some difficulty, some, I better go to him. He says, do you love me? And Jesus asks you a third time, verse 17, do you love me? And if you're honest, there's so much in your life that seems to say you don't love him. So why not take the words of Peter? Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Lord, you know all things. And maybe, Christian friend, it's time you brought the all things to him. And face up to what has been. Face up to your sins. Face up to your attitudes, behaviors. And confess them. Maybe the last time Christ walked through the rooms of your life, you packed those cherished sins away into the attic, like best-loved children. You went, shh, he'll hear you. It was a stay of execution. And then when Christ went, you let them all out of the attic, maybe one by one, but they've all come down. And they've filled the house, and now they've taken over. Well, there's that woman who she bought two miniature pigs for £1,500. They're supposed to only stay miniature pigs, but they grew into 250-stone porkers. And you've had your little miniature sins that are pet sins, that are safe sins, that are going to cause no harm to anyone. I can feed them, they're small, and get on with the rest of my life, but they've grown into 250-stone porkers, and they're trashing your life. What's in the all things? Lord, you know all things. Well, maybe it's time to look again and think, all I've ever been, when he first called me, I was a sinner and I fell upon his kind arms. I haven't progressed from there in one sense. I'm still a sinner. And I need to fall upon his kind arms. I need to bring the all things and confess them. If we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves and the truth is not in us. If we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. Brother, sister, has the time come after 2010 to renew your devotion, to renew your love, to renew your pledge, to give to him the love of your poor heart? What is his name? Jesus. For he will save his people from their sins. There's never been a time when he started loving you. He's always loved you. Even from everlasting. There'll never be a time when he'll stop loving you. He's loved you always. And what glorious demonstration has that been when he went to the cross and he gave himself. And when he sees you like this, as he tells us in Hosea, he says, my heart churns within me. It's the voice of the bridegroom, isn't it? Looking at his bride, she's got caught up in all sorts of sins that she's not dealing with, she's not prepared to face up to. He says, oh, come on, bring the all things to me. My heart churns within me when I see you like this. I'm asking you again, do you love me? What's your answer? Because if you love him, everything else will follow. Unfinished business. Time to confess. Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. And if you do, he'll treasure up the two mites of your love. He'll cover all else in the blood. And you'll meet your love with his. It's time to close, but just briefly the third point. What does Christ say to Peter? Verse 15, feed my lambs. Verse 16, tend my sheep. Verse 17, feed my sheep. Peter, you've messed up, but a restored Peter, there's a work for you. The care of my flock. And who better to care for the flock of Christ than the man who has wandered far and tasted the bitterness of a fall? This is now a humble, gentle, he'll be a patient Peter, won't he? And teachable and servant-hearted. And who better to lay down his life for the sheep than the man who'll do anything for the shepherd because he loves him? If you love Christ, you'll do anything for him, won't you? The rest will follow. So, Christian friend, what did you do for Jesus in 2010? Were you with the sheep? Were you with the lambs? And were you out looking for lost sheep? Did you get involved? Did you commit yourself? Did you put yourself out? Were you gentle and patient and humble? And I've got to say this, were you teachable? I worry that so few of God's people are teachable. We sort of feel we know better, that we're wiser than the Word. That the Word says this, but I can live over here, or I can live over there. As long as I keep roughly within the same area of the Word, it doesn't matter that much. We're deceiving ourselves. Were you teachable? Were you servant-hearted? Were you church-centered? That's where the sheep are, isn't it? That's where the sheep and the lambs are to be found. And why do it? Especially when sheep are stubborn and smelly and stupid and sheep are ungrateful. And why do it when it costs money, time, effort, energy, sanity? Why do it when it's cold and wet and dark? You won't be able to do it, will you? Unless you love the shepherd. Because the call to service is to love Jesus, to love Christ. If we love him, everything else follows. Hudson Taylor was at a missionary meeting A missionary stood up and said, I went to China because I love the Chinese. Hudson Taylor said, I didn't love the Chinese. It was my love for Christ that made me love the Chinese. That's why the great issue, Christian friend, it's a massive thing, isn't it? It's standing in front of you. It's huge. You can't this morning go round it. Jesus says, do you love me? Will you show that love by serving me? Serving me amongst my people, the sheep and the lambs in the church, serving me here and beyond. But Christian friend, there can be no going forward if there's unfinished business.